When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Well, let the games begin. We approach the deadline. It's midnight tonight for them to pass a new spending bill, a continuing resolution. Ramina Baccia joins us, Director of Budget and Entitlement Policy at the Cato Institute. Ramina, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And happy holidays to you before we get started. Ramina, I guess a great way of talking about this is let the games begin, right?
Yes, things keep changing. I'm unfortunately not yet able to get into quite into the holiday spirit because I'm basically keeping track of how this bill is developing. Are we going to have a government shutdown? Are they going to get rid of the debt limit? There's a lot at stakes at the moment.
Well, obviously, there's no money for Ramina then if you can't get into the holiday spirit in this bill, right? You may be the only one that's not getting any money.
Yes. Well, I will be part of the group of Americans, however, that's going to be paying for this bill, matter what. And that's always the problem, right, with these bills, is that all of us Americans get stuck with the tab, and the tab is getting really, really big. We have over $36 trillion in debt now, and how this bill gets handled will tell us a lot about what we can expect next year when it comes to the Trump tax cuts and whether DOGE or Congress or all of the above will actually cut any spending whatsoever.
Who's on what side right now? It seems as though the Republicans are fractured. I guess the Democrats have coalesced. I guess the speakership is up for grabs.
I mean, the thing is that you can solve this very easily. You do not need to vote on raising the debt limit, additional disaster aid, additional subsidies for wealthy farmers. You could just keep the government open. We are operating on a continuing resolution right now. It takes no more than one page for Congress to say, we haven't been able to make decisions on these other issues, but we're not going to shut the government down. We're just going to keep it open, continue the current continuing resolution. The problem is that they're trying to use this end of year Christmas deal when the American people are busy getting ready for the holidays and doing their last minute gift shopping in order to cram through another deficit busting bill. And so I've actually been amazed at the number of Republicans that have objected to this at the risk of their reelection prospects. I'm really encouraged by the courage we're witnessing from this Congress so close to Christmas, when we know they all have flights booked, they want to get out of town, but they're actually for once standing up for the American people.
I watched Chip Roy's, Representative Chip Roy from Texas, speech yesterday before Congress. It was blistering. I mean, he laid it all out, right?
He did. He did not hold back. He's really been a leader in this fight, and we've seen him lead on similar fights in previous years. I had the privilege of testifying before the House Budget Committee last week. He was there questioning us. So he's really at the forefront of this battle. And I was also amazed that 38 Republicans voted against this bill, despite personal threats from President-elect Donald Trump. By the way, where is the supposedly current President Biden in all of this? We haven't heard from President Biden at all. All we're hearing about is what Republicans are up to and what President-elect Donald Trump is asking them to do. It's like we have a president who's missing in action, and January 20th cannot come soon enough.
Well, he's given away billions, right, in tuition forgiveness. I mean,
every day it's
a billion here, billions there. He's given money, you know, all over the place. More money for green, more money chips. I mean, it's like Christmas for everyone.
And that's sort of the deal. What's at stake here is if Republicans had actually voted to waive the debt limits for the next 2 years, like Trump had asked for, it would have taken the pressure off them to actually cut spending next year when they're looking to extend the tax cuts. So this really sends a strong signal that Republicans are finally waking up to the need for fiscal responsibility. And I think in large part it is because they saw what happened to the Democrats because of the inflation the American people continue to suffer under. And Republicans know that if they don't cut spending, if they just extend the tax cuts and drive up the debt and deficit further, we will have another wave of inflation. And it could be potentially as bad, perhaps even worse down the road than the wave of inflation we just lived through. And they know they're going to pay the political price for that. And so even just that alone is a reason to step on the fiscal brakes and make sure that the tax cuts, the pro-growth tax cuts next year, get extended, but in a fiscally responsible way where Congress also cuts spending. Because you cannot increase spending and cut taxes into perpetuity. That is unsustainable, and that's how you will end up in a fiscal crisis. So if we want to keep taxes low, we also need to cut spending.
Yeah, that's how math works, right? It has no emotion. I mean, it is what it is. Were you surprised, because I was shocked, that they actually had a pay raise for them in that bill, the first iteration? Not that I don't, because I do believe they are worthy of a pay raise, but not in the way they were doing it. I mean, I am a big advocate, and I think you are too, for these single item bills, you know, that we don't have all of this jambalaya of issues into one thing, providing cover for everybody to vote yay or nay on these issues.
You know, I was almost wondering if they dropped that in as a strategic move to have something in there that could be sort of a shiny object that gets people distracted. And then they could have taken it out and said, OK, if you take this out, then we'll proceed with this bill. But it didn't work out that way. Yeah, I did think it was funny that they included that pay increase in the bill. Again, this was not the biggest issue by far with the bill. It included over $100 billion in new emergency spending with no provisions to pay for that at a time when our deficit is already at $1.8 trillion. We should not be adding fuel to the deficit fire. But that did get some attention. The bill, even taking that out wasn't enough to allow that bill to sail through.
So you look into your crystal ball. It looks like they're trying to not have the Democrats are saying if you put this debt limit in there, we're voting against it. Is that correct?
Oh, no. The Democrats were very happy to raise the debt limit. Yes.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Senator Warren said, get rid of the debt limit. We're with Trump on that. Oh, no. They love spending. They don't like the debt limit at all.
Yeah. So
the Republicans who said we're not raising the debt limit without spending cuts. We will raise the debt limit, but we got to cut spending first.
So then what I guess Trump's strategy is he doesn't want to have to negotiate with the Democrats at a later time if we just remove the debt limit now.
Actually, he wouldn't even have to. No, he wouldn't have to negotiate with the Democrats because next year, the Republicans control both the House and the Senate, and you can raise the debt limit as part of reconciliation. Trump doesn't want to have to negotiate with the fiscally responsible faction of the Republican Party.
The Republican
he doesn't
Party.
Want to
okay.
negotiate with the Chip Roys. That's what's really going on.
So how does this end up playing out? I mean, you know, as much as I read, I guess I was somewhat confused about who's where, what, when, and how. And I guess the general public, you know, who, if you're not following this, you have no clue. Mm-hmm. So you look in your crystal ball. What do you think happens today?
Well, finally, we're at a point where they're talking about voting on separate issues separately. So having a vote on the continuing resolution to keep the government open, having a separate vote on disaster relief so that members of Congress can go on the record if they just want to support that, and then having a separate vote on additional subsidies for farmers. I don't even think they should have a vote on that at all, but that's fine if they want to take a separate vote. The important thing is not to cram everything through in one package and hold, especially keeping the government open, hostage to all of these unrelated issues, right? And so I think that that is big progress. They also are taking the debt limit vote completely out of this process and saying, we will address that next year as part of reconciliation. That then means there's more pressure to actually make sure that those tax cuts get extended in a fiscally responsible manner. That means pairing tax cut extensions with spending reductions. And so that keeps the pressure on. So this looks like a very promising approach to me. We'll have to see if enough Republicans go for it and how many Democrats will be necessary to get it over the finish line. And if the Democrats want to have a government shutdown, because if you have a separate vote in the CR, it'll be much easier to pinpoint who actually voted against keeping the government open.
Absolutely. What is the exigency behind the farm aid bill?
That is a very good question. Lobbying, most likely, people wanting to get paid. Very well-organized special interest groups that benefit from taxpayer subsidies at the cost of the cost of the rest of us. Another bill that's being considered that the House already passed is the Social Security Unfairness Act. It's officially called the Social Security Fairness Act, but it's actually highly unfair. So I think we should call it what it is. And that would be a handout to public sector unions, boosting Social Security benefits for public sector workers who only paid into Social Security for part of their career and also have pensions from the public sector work. And it would unfairly increase their benefits to the tune of $200 billion over the next 10 years, which, of course, would accelerate Social Security's insolvency and then bring about potential benefit cuts or higher taxes to keep Social Security benefits flowing even sooner. And so that's another bill that is a good example of special interest groups being very effective at lobbying members of Congress to bestow them with special handouts and benefits at the cost at a cost to the rest of us.
If you would help me understand this, so why wouldn't you just in that with the public sector? I was one of those, and I have a pension, but I also worked a second job the entire time that I was in the public sector. You know, I taught at a university for 9 years. I had other jobs that I did on the side as a young man in the public sector, and I paid into Social Security for all of those jobs that I had. So what is the rub with that? You know, where I've paid into Social Security, and then I have to take a reduction of my public pension, and I'm not given the full benefit of what I actually, if anybody else had paid in what I paid in, they would have a benefit calculated for them based on the contribution. I'm not exactly clear what the issue is there.
Yeah, the issue is that Social Security benefits are only loosely tied to what you paid into Social Security. The benefit formula is highly progressive with the intent of ensuring that very low income earners have a sufficiently high benefit. And so there's a lot of redistribution that goes on through the benefit formula. And so what the windfall elimination provision tried to do is account for the fact that you may not actually be a low income person, but rather you just have a limited number of credits in Social Security because most of your career was spent in work that wasn't subject to Social Security taxation. And at the time when they adopted this formula, the Social Security Administration didn't have very sophisticated data, so they kind of adopted a blunt formula that works reasonably well, but causes some inequities. So there is reason to fix that formula. And there's actually an approach now that the Budget Committee Chairman Jody Arrington has introduced that would apply an actuarially fair calculation. So some people would see their benefits go up under that. Some people's benefits would be slightly reduced. But just simply repealing the windfall elimination provision would basically treat any public sector worker who has partial Social Security credits as if they were a low-income person and would give them a much higher replacement rate for their Social Security contributions than any other American will receive.
And that would be those that didn't get reach the necessary quarters, as many people refer to it?
Well, everyone, in order to collect any Social Security benefit, right, has to have 10 years of earnings in Social Security, and then the max number of years that Social Security will consider is 35. So for many of those public sector workers, they're over that 10-year threshold, but they don't have the 35 years.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
...of earnings.
Right. Okay. I see. I was kind of curious because they kept saying that people, you know, that there was a windfall that was going to be had, that they were being given credit for the years that they served in public service. And that didn't seem fair to me, if they had never worked and, you know, and never contributed to Social Security.
It's more about trying to distinguish who is actually low income and needs more redistribution through Social Security, because it's an income transfer program. If it was a pension program, if it was actually your savings with interest that you were getting back, we wouldn't even have to have this conversation. But because it is a progressive income transfer program. We want to make sure we distinguish people who are actually in need from people who just had outside earnings and then had, you know, some Social Security earnings, but most of their income came from work not subject to Social Security taxes. So we shouldn't treat those people as if they were poor Americans that need extra subsidies from other taxpayers.
And this was a provision that passed, if my memory serves me correct, under the Clinton years, right, when they were able to balance the budget, which I think might have been the last time they balanced the budget, right?
So the last major changes to Social Security happened in the 80s. But yeah, in the Clinton years, they did briefly balance the budget. In large part, it was because of cuts to defense spending, which ended up not being sustainable over the long term. And also there was a Social Security surplus. So they actually wouldn't have been able to balance the budget in early 2000 under the Clinton administration if it hadn't been for the Social Security payroll tax surplus. Of course, the Clinton administration got to take credit for that surplus and spend it immediately on other things, which is exactly what happened. And since 2010, Social Security has actually been running cash flow deficits, meaning now what it collects in taxes is no longer sufficient to pay out benefits. So it's now tapping Treasury to say, hey, remember when you spend all of our surpluses? Now it's time for you to pay those back. Of course, the problem is Treasury doesn't have any money that it doesn't get from the American people through either taxes or by selling government bonds, meaning adding to our debt.
So that's the act that people refer to as invading the Social Security Trust Fund? I mean, you hear that term of art all the time. You know, well, the government, you know, invaded the Social Security Trust Fund, and that's why Social Security's behind the eight ball at the present time.
It has, unfortunately, is a myth. Social Security never actually saved any money. Social Security was always an income transfer program where every dollar coming in was going out immediately, either for Social Security benefits or other government spending. There was a story that they told in 1935 in order to convince the American people that it was okay for the government to establish a general welfare program, which Social Security at the time was the first federal government general welfare program. Prior to that, you only had benefits for veterans. And so the American people didn't believe in handouts or welfare, so they came up with this elaborate story about how Social Security was an earned benefit and telling people that they were paying in and then they would get their money out. And instead of calling a tax, they called it a federal insurance contribution. But this was all rhetoric in order to get something that was really unprecedented in United States history past the finish line. And that's a myth that has persisted to this day. But Congress has never raided the Social Security Trust Fund. It's just that the way the program was designed, there's no vault, there's no real trust fund. That's just a label that was slapped on an intergovernmental accounting mechanism. Social Security's always been a income transfer program, not unlike food stamps or welfare benefits.
Well, you just took all of my holiday cheer away from me. I recognize I've been living this myth my entire life.
You're welcome.
I learned more today about Social Security than I have in a long, long time. And thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I have a great paper up at Cato.org called The Social Security Trust Fund Myth, if you need some Grinch-like reading this holiday season.
I will definitely read it this holiday season for sure. Because, you know, I was just curious about all these things that you hear, and it's like, no, that didn't happen, that didn't happen, that didn't happen. So they're selling us a pig in a poke, and we just don't know it, right?
That's right. That's how it goes.
Absolutely. Ramina Bhatia, thank you so much for joining us, Director of Budget and Entitlement Policy at Cato Institute. Again, have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.